Hello and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC, so a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It's a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on these days. And today, I would like to introduce you to Izza Wahab, who is undertaking her master's in the Department of Biomedical and Molecular Sciences, or you may have heard DBMS, under the supervision of Dr. Myron Suchek. Welcome to Grad Chat, Izza.
Hi, KM.
Thank you so much for coming today. And I want to ask, to start, what made you want to stay at Queen's for graduate school after completing your undergraduate degree here?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having
me. Of course.
I'm very happy to be here. With respect to your question, I did my undergrad at Queen's in health sciences, and I really liked health sciences and the faculty. I met Dr. Suchek through my best friend, Rochelle. She also did a grad chat here.
Oh, very nice.
And I thought Dr. Suchek was just the most eccentric, fun, and kind soul, so I really wanted to work with him. I remember my best friend would come home, and she'd be like, Dr. Suchek just shared his soup and his sandwich with me today. It was so lovely. His wife made it. And I just thought, I would love to work with someone who is so dedicated to the field, but also a compassionate person outside of work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a huge factor, right? Making sure you choose the right graduate supervisor.
Exactly.
And it sounds like it's a very nice fit for you so far.
Love the sandwiches.
And so for your research, you are working on your project. Estrone uses a biased GPCR signaling paradigm to modulate cancer progression. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like and what your project looks like on a day-to-day basis?
Of course, yeah. So there are three main forms of estrogen. Mm-hmm. There's E1, E2, and E3. So that's estrone, estradiol, and estriol.
Okay.
A lot of the research and the knowledge that circulates through the media is about estradiol, so E2, as opposed to E1 or E3.
Okay.
And this is because E2 dominates puberty to menopause. Mm. So for the vast majority of your life, E2 is the dominant hormone, or estrogen, I should say. But after menopause, E1 dominates. Mm. And a lot of the research doesn't focus on E1 because it has a lower binding affinity relative to E2. And so people think, you know, we're binding to the same receptors. Shouldn't we focus on the one that binds stronger and dominates over a longer period of our time?
Mm-hmm.
But after menopause, the E1 levels circulate even up to 100 times more than E2.
Okay, wow.
So it's important to look at something, even though it may not bind as strongly, we see a lot of it. And there's hardly as much E2 at all after menopause. So that's why I wanted to look more so into E1 as opposed to E2. And what I'm actually doing with E1 is I want to look at a specific signaling pathway. And that's where the GPCR comes in. So GPCR stands for G protein coupled receptor.
Okay.
And the goal here is to see if E1 can employ a specific GPCR that we look at in the lab called NMBR, if that can interact with, so E1 has its GPCR called GPER, and we want to see if this interacts with a GPCR that we've been focusing on in the lab called NMBR. And then this will activate a downstream pathway, which will ultimately affect cancer progression. You can either increase or decrease cancer progression.
Okay, so it sounds very integral to understanding women's cancers then.
Exactly.
Okay.
Very much so.
Very nice. So you mentioned that E2 is kind of has been the main focus of a lot of literature so far. So, and you're switching to E1 instead. So what is the importance of your research if E1 uses this pathway that you've described to either increase or decrease cancer progression?
Yeah, so the implications of this for women after menopause, let's say that I have determined that E1 uses this pathway to increase cancer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then we might want to target this pathway to prevent cancer from exacerbating.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say E1 uses this pathway to decrease cancer. Then we might want to look into supplementing E1, and then maybe that would help women prevent cancer or help treat cancer. Those are definitely down the line, but this would be the formative research to get us to that place down the line.
Oh, very exciting. So it sounds like it's your research could have some very potential clinical mm-hmm. impacts or interventions in the future.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yes, of course.
Maybe 20 years, but yes. You know, we'll get there hopefully.
But of course, research, right? We all mm-hmm. Research contributes piece by piece, and everything that's built mm-hmm. on allows, you know, the next generation of researchers and clinicians to then develop from exactly. there. So hopefully, oh, that's mm-hmm. very exciting though. So do the levels of E1 have different effects? Because you mentioned that they fluctuate over mm-hmm. over a woman's lifetime. So do these levels, do they impact women differently? And is a high level a good thing, a low level a good thing? What are the different impacts that, you know, different levels could have on mm-hmm. a woman?
Yeah, of course. This is something that has been very tumultuous in okay. my research. Mm-hmm. I initially started my research using super physiological concentrations of E1, which just means above normal physiological levels. Okay. And I found that E1 prevented cancer progression for the most part through different experiments that I had done.
Okay, so if someone had an elevated level, mm-hmm. you're working with elevated levels.
Exactly.
And, okay.
Yeah. And so that contrasted with previous literature that I had come across. Mm. And I was wondering, you know, I'm using E1, I'm using the same cell lines, I'm using the same experimental methodology. Why am I seeing contradictory results? So my mm-hmm. results are showing that, you know, the cancer cells aren't migrating, they aren't getting worse. But the literature is saying that it is making it worse, and it's mm. making it more so, the cancer cells are moving to a greater extent in my E1 treated cells rather than E2. So what's the cause for this discrepancy? Why mm-hmm. am I seeing different results? And so that's where I had different ideas. I was thinking, you know, maybe E1 is being converted to E2 by enzymes, because that can happen sometimes. Mm. Or, you know, maybe that could be one. But the reason why I was able to say that, rule that out, was because I had used E2 before mm-hmm. and I saw similar lack of migration in my cancer cells. So it wasn't the E1 turning into E2. And then I also looked at the cell types. I had used a variety of cell types. I used pancreatic cancer cells, I used breast cancer cell types. I was still seeing this discrepancy. It wasn't making sense. And then I finally came to the conclusion that it's the concentrations.
Okay.
The concentrations that I'm using, because they're so high, I'm seeing different results. And, you know, it might be that the receptor is getting desensitized, because I mentioned that pathway mm-hmm. involving the G protein coupled receptors. Maybe because the concentrations are so high, we're seeing that receptor not functioning as it normally would.
Mm.
So maybe we're seeing dose dependent effects. And so I've tried to go back to the drawing board and start things from scratch and work with a broader range of concentrations. So from zero to normal physiological mm-hmm. levels to slightly above normal physiological levels. And I want to, you know, rerun those experiments, make sure that what I'm seeing is actually true results.
Oh, that's very exciting then, right? That you're, and I think a very clear part of the research process, right? You're mm-hmm. seeing these, you're testing your hypothesis, you're getting these strange results that contradict the literature that you're mm-hmm. reading, you're brainstorming, and then you're back to the drawing board with a new experimental design, yeah. which you're now undertaking. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of nice to see that it's research in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes, you mentioned that it might be the high concentration of E1 might be kind of disrupting some of the signaling that's going mm-hmm. on. So why are you investigating this specific pathway, the GPCR that you mentioned, and not maybe other pathways that are happening as E1 is traveling through your different cell types?
Yeah. So a major reason why I chose to do this is because I wanted to look into MB231 cancer cells. And so that is a triple negative breast cancer cell line. And
that would be, for our listeners, that would be like an aggressive form of cancer?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's different receptors that, mm-hmm. that cancers have. And with triple negative breast cancer, we can't work with those receptors mm. like we normally would. And that's what makes it so aggressive. We can't target what we normally would have been able to
mm-hmm.
with another breast cancer cell line. And so if we can't target those normal pathways, I wanted to look into this new pathway that should be found in all cells. And my research has shown it is present in these triple negative breast cancer cell lines. And it, let's say it does promote cancer down the line, I can target this pathway to help women with these particularly aggressive cancers.
Mm.
Potentially.
Hopefully, yes. Yeah, no, in a new way, though. That's very exciting, right? The potential there mm-hmm. for you to find a new avenue for maybe future again, this is all down the line, mm-hmm. but to contribute to the development of like different drug delivery pathways mm-hmm. or different interventions that could decrease the spread or the intensity mm-hmm. of different cancers traveling. Mm-hmm. So where and how does your research fit into the overall direction of Dr. Suchik's lab? It sounds like you mentioned your friend had done research mm-hmm. and that kind of inspired you to get involved in the first place. But where does your research fit within where Dr. Suchik's lab is exploring right now?
Yeah, of course. So Dr. Suchik is particularly interested in the signaling pathway. Mm. And what we do with our lab is different individuals have different compounds that they use to see how it interacts with this pathway. So for example, my best friend who was investigating cannabinoids, people are also looking into fentanyl, hydromorphone, all those kinds of things to see how it affects this pathway. And historically, we have looked at this pathway with pancreatic cancer and showed promising results. And that's taking, hopefully, fingers crossed, clinical trials are going to be successful with that. But this pathway is the focus of Dr. Suchik's lab, and just experimenting with different things, seeing how they interact with different types of cancer, different types of compounds, all that stuff.
Oh, very, very interesting. And mm-hmm. you kind of alluded to this a little bit already, but what impact do you think your research, your colleagues' research, and you know the general research of Dr. Suchik's lab could have for men and women with cancer in general? Like what are some of the potential impacts that you see coming out of the lab?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with respect to the pancreatic cancer, well, so we have this pathway. Mm-hmm. And if you target specific parts of this pathway, you can prevent cancer progression downstream. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we found with different compounds. So for example, we found that if we inhibited this specific part of the pathway, we would prevent cancer progression in pancreatic cancer. And that applies to different compounds mm-hmm. that we're using. So let's say cannabinoids increase cancer using this pathway, then maybe we want to look into stopping this pathway, potentially decreasing the use of cannabinoids. Mm-hmm. Those are downstream applications depending on the results that we find after working with this pathway. It depends on the results that we see with mm-hmm. each compound, but with each compound, we can either take it in two directions, either it promotes cancer, prevents cancer, or it has no effect. Depending on the knowledge that we acquire, we can use that and see how we're going to use that clinically down the line, potentially.
So it sounds like a lot of many different avenues mm-hmm. for increasing our knowledge around cancer and how different types of cancers and how they operate mm-hmm. and ways we can either make clinical interventions or lifestyle interventions mm-hmm. to try and kind of decrease cancer growth and progression mm-hmm. in the future. That sounds like the main goal, which sounds like
it all depends on what we find.
Yeah.
But either way, we're either going to find that cancer is being exacerbated or it's not. It potentially is getting improved or there's no effect. Mm-hmm. But depending on the results that we find, we can encourage those lifestyle alterations or potentially clinical interventions down the line.
Oh, so it sounds like very promising work and very exciting work, because I know I think many people have experience with cancer, whether in their own lives and the lives mm-hmm. of their friends and family, and it's something mm-hmm. that touches a lot of people in different ways. So I think your research contributing to our understanding of that and, you know, the development of better interventions and treatments, I'm sure is much appreciated by many, many people in Canada. And it sounds like you stay quite busy in the lab then with all of this going on. It sounds like there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. More or less, we definitely have fun.
Oh, that's good.
We definitely have fun. Dr. Suchik can attest to that. We have a lot of fun in the lab.
Well, it sounds like it's a great place to be and really be doing, conducting some research. Mm-hmm. So you're working within this triple negative breast cancer cell line, mm-hmm. and you're investigating a pathway where E1 is moving, like where E1 is moving through. How do you know that that's the pathway that you're actually investigating and it's not, you know, moving somewhere else through the cell? How do you confirm that in your research?
Of course. So the mere fact that I'm using those triple negative breast cancer mm-hmm. cell lines is to more definitively isolate the effects that I'm seeing mm-hmm. to this pathway. So I originally had to use pancreatic cell lines and other breast cancer mm-hmm. cell lines that have those different receptors. So estrogen can bind to different receptors, but by using triple negative breast cancer cell lines, they lack those receptors. I had mentioned earlier, that's why it's such an aggressive cancer, because it doesn't have those typical means to exert effects or to target. So by using those triple negative breast cancer cell lines, I can isolate the effects that I'm seeing to my pathway more so than if it had other receptors to use. It just doesn't have those receptors. So I know, or have a greater inclination, that it is using this pathway. Mm. just doesn't have another route.
Yes. So it's, so that's helpful for both knowing the impact that E1 is having, and then also for I guess your methodology, it makes sense as well, right, to use this like in both the type of cell you're using and then both to the measurements you're trying to take. It, it allows you to do both really well.
Yeah, and I'll consolidate that with further experiments, of course, but using that cell line to begin with is a good starting spot.
Okay. But in addition to all of this work that you're doing, I hear that you also have a pretty wide variety of hobbies that keep you busy outside of the lab.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about your forays into pottery to start with?
Yeah, so I do pottery in this lovely lady's basement, Linda. Free promo for Linda. She's wonderful. And I've been doing pottery with her since the entirety of my undergrad, so it's been around like 5 years
now,
I would say.
Wow.
For a really long time, I just did hand building, so sculpting. I made things like skulls, like figurines, sculptures, stuff like that. But now I've been working with a wheel.
Okay.
And those skills are not translatable in the slightest. I'm really struggling with it, but...
The wheel is hard, right? Getting centered on the wheel is incredibly hard. I've dabbled, but it is so hard to do.
It really is. Yes. And then every time you think you've got it, something goes wrong and you're like, oh my goodness, I just spent 30 minutes trying to center this pot and it just flew off the wheel, you know? But it is so fun experimenting with little things. And it, you know, something from the lab is you learn patience. You have to, you learn and you try again and you learn and you try again. It's iterative. And I find that I do that a lot in pottery as well. Just, I mess up, I learn, and then I try again.
Try again, yes. Yeah. That same approach to research design on the wheel.
Uh-huh.
And what have you been, have you made anything in particular on the wheel? Have you had any success with it so far?
Yeah, or, yes, I'm working with little bowls now.
Lovely.
And I'm having a lot of fun working with the glazes. I used to be a little bit conservative with my glazing. I didn't experiment too much, but now I've been, you know, trying to mix colors, and it's been really fun.
What have you come up with any color combos that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, What's really interesting about glazing is, I'm sure you might know, you dip it in red and it becomes black. You know, it changes because the temperature of the kiln is so high. And I've really like this cat's eye sort of thing that I'm making. So it's the bowl itself, I would dip it in potentially green and then black on the rim or something, and it would look like almost like a cat's eye or something.
Oh, very cool.
So
yeah.
I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Yes, and that's also, again, the lessons of research and design coming through a lot in pottery.
Of course,
And I wonder, too, depending on what your background in undergrad was, I know you said you were in health sciences, so I know that can mean a variety of things, but... If you ever have to touch on any chemistry background for your glazing, thinking about back to high school chemistry, or I don't know if you took chemistry in undergrad to think about what type of reactions you could expect. But then there's so many variables, so you can't really...
I know nothing.
It's both an art and a science, right?
Yeah,
and,
of course. I focus on the art part.
Yes.
Well, at least when it comes to pottery.
Yes, the fun part, yes. Yeah. So, and I hear that you have some other artistic outlets as well beyond pottery. So could you tell me about some of the other things that you get up to creatively?
Yeah, I do also in another wonderful lady's basement, I do some painting and sketching. So far, I've been trying to recreate some really famous pieces of art. So The Kiss has been a painting. I think his name is Gustav Klimt.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
Pronouncing
yes.
It right? It's a very famous painting by him, and it's always spoken to me. I always thought it was so beautiful. So I repainted that. I had my own kind of artistic flair. And I've been working with gold foil as well, just implementing into that the painting.
Did you do the full scale of the Kiss? No, because I know it's quite a gigantic painting.
No, definitely not. It's probably a little bit bigger than the average paper. And right now I'm doing, I think it's The Lady with the Parasol or The Woman with the Parasol by Monet.
Okay,
so
very nice.
That's the latest.
That's one. And did you, are these different teachers that you find, are they from the local Kingston community?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Okay.
They're wonderful. I grew up in Kingston, actually.
Oh, nice.
So I've had these connections, or I've been familiar with people. So I work with Chinbo for art, Chinbo School of Art, another promo. And so I did art classes with her in high school, and then things got a little bit busy, and I discontinued, and then I decided, you know, there's some things that you need to make time for, despite how busy your lab is or despite whatever you're busy with. And so I was like, I really want to get started again. And she welcomed me with open arms, and here we are.
Oh, that's lovely. No, it's nice to have balance, right?
Yeah,
those things
course.
Help. And I do think, like you have said, there's a lot of crossover in some of the kind mm-hmm. of the lessons that you learn from research that yeah. you apply to other things, especially art, which mm-hmm. is so, like you said, iterative, but it's always an experiment. So mm-hmm. it's nice that you see this yeah. Kind of crossover. And I'm sure working in the background of your subconscious when you're enjoying painting or pottery, your mind is working on those problems. Like, yeah. why won't my experiment show me what I was expecting?
Yeah, and then you just go back to the drawing board because you really think that something is going to be one way. Mm-hmm. It never is, no. you know? And then you have to just start all over again.
And yes, I would say those apply equally to art and to research, yeah, right? Yes, course. So mm-hmm. that is, it's nice that you're able to keep yeah. those passions going. Mm-hmm. And I also hear that you have a special type of cruise planned for this summer. Where are you planning to travel, and what are you going to be up to on this trip?
Yeah, so the cruise that actually happened, it was a one-day kind of expedition, what it's called, All the Rage Sport Fishing.
Okay.
It's chartered fishing, and the person who, I think his name was Mike, he's actually a professor at Queen's.
Oh, very cool.
I think he is in, I think he works with physio.
Okay.
His research seemed to be related to cardiac health and something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, Mike, if I'm butchering your research. Dr. Mike, I should say. But we set out to Lake Ontario. We mm-hmm. just went into the middle of the lake, and you know, all you could see was water. And you know, I don't know if you've watched like Life of Pi or mm-hmm. anything like that, mm-hmm. where it just seems so fictional. You're like, oh my goodness, like what might that feel like, that kind of, you're just, it's just you. There's nothing else. It's just you. But it was a relaxing feeling. It didn't cause me any panic. And we unfortunately didn't catch any fish, but it was really relaxing. I took a nap in the sun, you know. it was an interesting experience. And he said, you know, it's such a wonderful experience to catch, you know, mm-hmm. a big lake trout. So he's like, you have to come again. And, you know, it's on the house because we didn't catch anything the first time.
Oh, that's lovely. So will you go back again this mm-hmm. summer, do you think?
Fingers crossed, June or July, we'll be back.
And are you an avid fisher person?
I am. Okay. I love fishing. My dad and I go fishing all the time. There's a lot of bass and pike in Kingston and the surrounding areas. So we always go fishing around this time.
And I guess what would be your largest catch or your favorite catch yeah. of all time?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, you mm-hmm. know. There was this one time I was fishing and I had got this bass mm-hmm. and the bass wasn't too big, but as I was reeling it in, there's a bigger pike going in to eat the bass. And so I'd reeled it in and I ended up only catching the bass because the pike hadn't, you know, securely eaten the bass. And my dad was like, oh my goodness, why did you do that? Like, why didn't you get the pike too? And I was like, no, I did my best. There's only so much you can do. You can't.
Trying to get a double catch.
Exactly.
That's,
you know,
pretty incredible.
Yeah. I got a single catch, you know, yes. hopefully that would, I mean, it fed us, so we're good. Yeah.
Oh, that's, well, it sounds like you've got some fun plans mm-hmm. and that you've also, I know you've been trying some Brazilian jiu-jitsu out. You are a person of all trades.
Like, yeah, I tried jiu-jitsu, but everything hurt. I go to jiu-jitsu and I'd come back and I'd be bruised and I'd be like, my head hurts, my fingers hurt, like everything hurts. So I've discovered I'm more of a lover and not so much of a fighter. I think I might try something maybe a little bit less prone to concussions, mm-hmm. something that would make me less prone to concussions. So I think I might try maybe, I think it was another type of martial arts. So
try something else.
I went to a dip fest where people bring things to dip and things to dip in. And one of the ladies there, she was like, you know, you got to try this type of martial arts. So I'm trying to remember what it is, but once I remember, I'll know for
sure. Reach out
to
her. Yeah. Yes. No. Yeah. So it sounds like you are not afraid to try anything, it sounds like.
I try to try everything at least once. And mm-hmm. I like most things. And even if you don't like it, at least you know now that you don't like it.
No, that sounds. And do you coerce any of your lab mates into joining you on some of these different activities? Or
I mean, if they're not too busy, the lab gets busy. But Rochelle, actually, my best friend again, she encouraged me to try jiu-jitsu, so I tried it because she had so much fun with it. Again, I think she's a little bit more resilient than I am because she's decided to continue. But yeah, we do a little bit of that stuff together.
And what type of advice would you give to other master's or PhD students on campus who are maybe new to Kingston and are looking for fun things to do, mm-hmm. what advice would you give to them to find out about these different types of activities?
Yeah, so I find that a lot of people say, oh, I've always wanted to try pottery when I tell them I've done pottery, or, you know, I really like fishing, but it seems to be just a wish and not something they follow through with. And so I think if you're interested in anything and you're a little bit nervous, you're like, this is new, I don't know how to do this, go online, ask your friends, you know, really make the most of your time here, because you only have so much time, and Kingston is a beautiful place. It's not boring by any means. You have to make the most of what you're given, and I think that if you want to try something, go for it, search for it, ask people, you will find it.
Yeah, you'll find find someone who's willing to take you out on their boat, or take you to their studio, or take you somewhere. And how do you balance all of your responsibilities and activities? Do you have any advice for folks who are thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so busy in the lab, but all these extracurriculars sound lovely. How do you balance all of those?
I say you have to dedicate. I used to be so busy in undergrad, I'd say, I need to have Fridays off. That's the one day I need to have completely to myself. And I think that if you're able to afford that in the lab, or even maybe not an entire day, sometimes that's not reasonable or feasible, saying, you know, after 5 p.m., after I leave the lab, I need to have Mondays to myself, and I need to dedicate that to pottery. Even if you don't have a teacher, maybe you can buy your own wheel, and maybe you can try it yourself. Mm-hmm. And then it's on your own time. It offers you more flexibility that way. But just making sure you dedicate a specific day or time to yourself and making the most of it.
Yeah, so carving out some time. Mm-hmm. As it sounds like, are you good at scheduling then, like scheduling yourself and all of your activities?
Yes, that's for sure.
No, it's challenging, right? But it's important, because I do think when you are able to enjoy your life outside of research, that it also brings more joy into your research as well. But I know there's seasons of research where you have to be in the lab at all times, depending on what type of... Yeah. You know, if you're working with an animal model or a cell model, you might need to attend to those beings quite a bit.
Yeah.
But when you've left for the day, to make sure you build in some time for self-care or whatever activity recharges you.
Yeah.
Well, it has been so lovely speaking with you. Thank you so much for coming in, Izza. Good luck with the rest of your research. And I can't wait to see where your topic takes you and where your work may end up down the line in a few decades as well.
I'll keep you updated. Thank you so much, KM, for having me. I've had such a wonderful time.
Oh, thank you.
This has been such an amazing opportunity. Another thing for grad students, do come here. This is amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the shameless promotion. We would love to feature all grad students and postdocs across campus.
Yeah.
We love to learn about what you're working on, and we want to share your work with our broader community. So if you are ever interested, please reach out. You can find, if you search Grad Chat on the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs website, you can find our page and how to join us. And we would love to learn more about what you are up to. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. Until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.